The following program features the opinions of the host. Listeners are encouraged to seek their own understanding.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That opening line of the Bible is familiar not only to Christians, but non-believers as well. The second verse of Genesis reads, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." In the beginning, there was chaos. Welcome to the Ghost in You podcast, a podcast about the weird, the wonderful, and the terrifying in the Bible. I'm Diane Student, your guide and host on this strange journey through the Bible. This is Episode 1, Leviathan. I find it interesting that chaos is associated with water here, because in this episode, we're going to talk about the chaos dragon, whom is also the sea. God goes on to separate the heaven and the earth. These were two parts of water. The chief Babylonian god was Marduk. The Babylonians had a myth that Marduk battled Tiamat, an ancient sea monster, and tore Tiamat's body in two, forming the heavens and the earth from it. Remember this for later. Genesis 1:21 reads, "So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." Notice that this verse doesn't just say the fish in the ocean, but rather great sea creatures, and separates that from every living creature with which the waters swarm. There were sea monsters. The Hebrew word used is tannin, which means dragon, serpent, or sea monster. Leviathan. Just the name sends chills down the spine. Leviathan, king of the sea, unconquerable sea serpent, with fearsome teeth and scales like shields. Sounds like something out of a Greek myth or the latest horror movie out of Hollywood. Hard to believe that this creature is in the Bible. Sea monsters are something we're all familiar with. Who hasn't heard of the Loch Ness Monster? Nessie, as this creature came to be known, was first seen around 500 AD. Loch Ness is a large freshwater lake near Inverness, Scotland, in the Scottish Highlands that reaches a depth of nearly 800 feet and is the largest volume of fresh water in Great Britain. So, plenty of room for a sea monster. The interesting part about this first documented sighting is that it was recorded in the 7th century biography of St. Columba, who was an Irish missionary that introduced Christianity to Scotland. Now, while most stories about Nessie don't seem scary, and so this creature seems nothing like Leviathan, St. Columba stopped specifically at Loch Ness because he'd heard that there was a beast in the water that was killing people who would be swimming in the lake or fishing on it. And it just so happened that St. Columba saw the monster about to attack a man, and he invoked the name of God and yelled, "Go back," with all speed. The creature retreated and never seemed to attack anyone again. So maybe that's why Nessie seems docile. But is it possible that Nessie could live for all these years? A photo that later was proven to be a hoax was published in 1934, but people in more recent years have claimed to see it, and expeditions and scientific studies have continued for decades. Other legends of sea monsters include Champ in Lake Champlain, Mussie in Ogopogo in Canada, Selma in Norway, and there are many more. Old maritime maps feature little sea monster images, and one has to wonder if it was because they heard legends about those areas, or if sea monsters were really seen there. The Greeks had their Hydra, which was a nine-headed gigantic water snake that was the offspring of Typhon and Echidna. The Hydra was impossible to kill because once one of its heads was cut off, two more would grow in its place. In Norse mythology, there is a large sea serpent known as Jörmungandr, or the Midgard serpent. The name means huge monster, and this creature was reputedly the middle child of the giantess Angraboda and Loki, who was a shapeshifter. After Odin threw the serpent into the ocean, it grew so big that it was able to surround the earth and grasp its own tail. Also of interest is that when the Midgard serpent releases its tail, Ragnarok will begin, which is an ending of the world before it renews again. The name Leviathan shows up in literature. The narrator in Moby Dick is named Ishmael, and he says, "When I stand among these mighty Leviathan skeletons, skulls, tusks, jaws, ribs, and vertebrae, all characterized by partial resemblances to the existing breeds of sea monsters." John Milton compares Leviathan to Satan in Paradise Lost, with the creature floating in the ocean of hell as Satan is now depicted as a sea beast. Leviathan appears 6 times in the Bible in 5 verses. There's Psalm 74, 13-14. "It was you who split open the sea by your power. You broke the heads of the monster in the waters. It was you who crushed the heads of Leviathan and gave him as food to the creatures of the desert." Isaiah 27:1. "In that day the Lord will punish with his sword, his fierce, great, and powerful sword, Leviathan the gliding serpent, Leviathan the coiling serpent. He will slay the monster of the sea." Job 3:8. "May those who curse days curse that day, those who are ready to rouse Leviathan." Psalm 104:26. "There the ships go to and fro in Leviathan, which you formed to frolic there." That kind of harkens back to Genesis 1:21 from earlier in this episode with God creating Leviathan. There it says, "which you formed to frolic there." And then the ultimate reference in the Bible is a whole chapter. That's right. There's a whole chapter in the Bible about a sea monster. Psalm 41:1. "Can you pull in Leviathan with a fish hook or tie down its tongue with a rope? Can you put a cord through its nose or pierce its jaw with a hook? Will it keep begging you for mercy? Will it speak to you with gentle words? Will it make an agreement with you for you to take it as your slave for life? Can you make a pet of it like a bird or put it on a leash for the young women in your house? Will traders barter for it? Will they divide it up among the merchants? Can you fill its hide with harpoons or its head with fishing spears? If you lay a hand on it, you will remember the struggle and never do it again. Any hope of subduing it is false. The mere sight of it is overpowering. No one is fierce enough to rouse it. Who then is able to stand against me? Who has a claim against me that I must pay? Everything under heaven belongs to me. I will not fail to speak of Leviathan's limbs, its strength, and its graceful form. Who can strip off its outer coat? Who can penetrate its double coat of armor? Who dares open the doors of its mouth, ringed about with fearsome teeth? Its back has rows of shields tightly sealed together. Each is so close to the next that no air can pass between. They are joined fast to one another. They cling together and cannot be parted. Its snorting throws out flashes of light. Its eyes are like the rays of dawn. Flames stream from its mouth. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke pours from its nostrils as from a boiling pot over burning reeds. Its breath sets coals ablaze and flames dart from its mouth. Strength resides in its neck. Dismay goes before it. The folds of its flesh are tightly joined. They are firm and immovable. Its chest is hard as rock, hard as a lower millstone. When it rises up, the mighty are terrified. They retreat before its thrashing. The sword that reaches it has no effect, nor does the spear or the dart or the javelin. Iron it treats like straw and bronze like rotten wood. Arrows do not make it flee. Sling stones are like chaff to it. A club seems to it but a piece of straw. It laughs at the rattling of the lance. Its undersides are jagged potsherds, leaving a trail in the mud like a threshing sledge. It makes the depths churn like a boiling cauldron and stirs up the sea like a pot of ointment. It leaves a glistening wake behind it. One would think the deep had white hair. Nothing on earth is its equal, a creature without fear. It looks down on all that are haughty. It is king over all that are proud. Now, there are some scholars who claim that Leviathan was some kind of prehistoric crocodile or something. but I've never known a crocodile to breathe fire. And while they are tough, I mean, I'm not swimming around one, they can be subdued and can be killed. Plus, the Hebrew word for Leviathan is Leviathan, with Ivya as its root, which means twist, coil, sinuous one, a kind of serpent. There are those who believe that this is just a mythical creature, but I find it hard to believe that God would make this, big dramatic declaration about being able to defeat and control a mythical creature. My whole premise of this podcast is that legends and myths are far more real than we may care to believe. And for those who shout science, there's no reason why these myths and legends can't fit in our modern reality. Every year, some amazing discoveries have been made that cause people to question reality. After all, dinosaurs most certainly could be called monsters. I just happen to believe that Leviathan was something far more than just a plesiosaur. Leviathan shows up in Mesopotamian myth as Yam, the Semitic sea god, and is revealed in a myth found in a Ugaritic Canaanite myth of Baal. The chief god of their pantheon is El, and he gave divine kingship to Yam, who rules over the underground springs, rivers, lakes, and oceans. Yam means sea in Hebrew. In the myth, Baal is rival to Yam, and when El agrees to make Baal a bond servant of Yam, Baal refuses, and there is a fight. Yam is slain by Baal using magical weapons, and Baal gets the kingship. Scholars believe that Yam is Leviathan. Clearly, Leviathan was something akin to a god, and if Leviathan was Hydra, it doesn't die. Yet another reason why Yahweh would make a point of using Leviathan to describe his own power. And just so you all know, I do use Yahweh and God interchangeably. They are the same to me. The Binding of Yam is a Ugaritic story about Yam that appears on a cuneiform tablet. Wayne T. Pittard wrote an article about this in the Journal of Near Eastern Studies, Volume 57, Number 4, in 1998, which was published by the University of Chicago Press. In the article, he talks about the issue with trying to translate the tablet, which is missing nearly all of the reverse inscription and has missing characters on the front. But he believed that it was clear that Yam was used here not as a generic sea term, but was speaking of the god Yam. Unfortunately, the missing characters make it hard to figure out who did the binding of Yam. Pittard thinks it was either Baal or Anat. I would lean towards Baal because this supports the claims of Yahweh that he can destroy Yam, and Baal was the Canaanite version of their creator god. Yam is the Hebrew word for sea. Leviathan is Yam. So Leviathan is the sea. He also is chaos. In Genesis 1:2, the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. The Spirit of God was hovering over Leviathan, or chaos. This comes up again in Revelation, and it is good news. Revelation 21:1 says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, comma, and there was no longer any sea." I don't think he was just saying, oh, there's no more oceans. Because if there's a new earth and a new heaven, why wouldn't we have water around? I kind of enjoy the ocean, don't you? Chaos is gone. And going back to the Babylonian creation story of Tiamat being split to create the heaven and the earth, is that what God did in Genesis? Was Yam or Leviathan the deep, the darkness, the water that God hovered over and then split to make the heaven and the earth? The book of Enoch speaks of Leviathan in chapter 60. And on that day, two monsters will be separated from one another. A female monster whose name is Leviathan to dwell in the depths of the sea above the springs of the waters. And I asked that other angel to show me the power of those monsters, how they were separated on one day and thrown, one into the depths of the sea and the other onto the dry ground of the desert. And he said to me, "Son of man, you here wish to know what is secret." And the angel of peace who was with me said to me, "These two monsters prepared in accordance with the greatness of the Lord will feed them, that punishment of the Lord, and children will be killed with their mothers and sons with their fathers." 2 Esdras 6:49 reads, "Then you kept in existence two living creatures, the one you called Behemoth, and the name of the other Leviathan. And you separated one from the other, for the seventh part, where the water had been gathered together, could not hold them both. And you gave Behemoth one of the parts that had been dried up on the third day, to live in it, where there are 1,000 mountains. But to Leviathan you gave the seventh part, the watery part, and you've kept them to be eaten by whom you wish, and when you wish." And the book of Enoch and 2 Esdras are extra-biblical sources. An interesting observation is that Leviathan in Job doesn't seem to be evil or rival to God, but in Psalms and Isaiah it seems to be the embodiment of evil, and some biblical scholars claim that it is a type for Satan. Could it have been a shapeshift of Satan or Lucifer? Leviathan is also thought to be a precursor to the red dragon in Revelation, and some biblical scholars believe the dragon is Satan. I believe that this was not only a real creature, but a supernatural one. God clearly created it, and quite possibly made two, destroying one to keep procreation from creating a bunch of these monsters. If Leviathan is a serpent-like creature, and Satan appeared in the Garden of Eden as a serpent, could he have been Leviathan at that time, or was he a dragon? Does he shapeshift between the two, or are they one and the same? A dragon is very similar to a serpent, but it has feet. I've heard theories that the serpent in the Garden of Eden did have feet, and that's why God's curse on it was for it to crawl on its belly and eat dirt. Where is Leviathan today? I venture to guess that he is in an underworld dimension, with a portal that will be opened when the final end times are upon us. So was Leviathan a dragon before it was a serpent? Did Leviathan exist? And does he still exist? The ghost in you knows. And since we opened the door on dragons, we'll be talking about them on the next episode. If you'd like to contact me, you can do that at theghostinyoupod@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you for joining me on this episode. May God bless you and keep you. The Ghost in You podcast is researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Diane Student. Our theme music is by Muse Music with Groove Studios. All of the music is by artists from filmmusic.io.